We'll send you a free copy of the new Christmas Archbook, O Bethlehem. All you have to do is leave your answer to the question, Issues Etc., What Does This Mean?, on the Issues Etc. comment line before Friday, November 20th, 618-223-8382. Be sure to give us your first name and tell us where you're from. 618-223-8382. Issues Etc., What Does This Mean? 618-223-8382. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. There does seem to be a disconnect at times between what you read when it comes to how the Western media covers ISIS. The things that are said there, it's often put in political terms, and the disconnect between that and what ISIS is actually saying in its public statements, especially in statements like those made claiming responsibility for the Paris attacks, the terrorist attacks there last Friday. Joining us to talk about media coverage of the goals of ISIS, Terry Mattingly, Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City. He's author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate, and he is founder and editor of GetReligion.org. Terry, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Glad to be here.
Has ISIS changed its overall goal, or has the Western media, have the Western media finally begun to figure out what ISIS' goal has been all along?
Well, I would answer that they changed slightly long ago, I mean several years ago, and since then ISIS has been very consistent in what it's doing. And I would argue that I still don't see a whole lot of evidence that the American media has accepted ISIS's view of what its goals are. We see this all the time in terms of debates about what the word caliphate means and what it meant historically and what the leaders of ISIS have said today about it, what it means. I mean, basically, the leader who calls himself, of course, Caliph Ibrahim, He has stated right up front what his goals are, and yet in most newspapers, you would see, ISIS is trying to build a state in the Middle East in territories consisting of parts of Iraq and Syria, and militarily, that is what they're doing at the moment, but that is not their goal. I mean, he has already announced himself as a descendant of the tribe of Muhammad, as the successor to Muhammad, and he has said, I am the leader of the world's Muslims. And any Muslim who does not pledge allegiance to the caliphate, we either want to convince them or kill them, along with anybody else that gets in our way. Which, did you notice that people in some of the media coverage of Paris struggled with this whole idea that, like, why did they do this? I mean, why is ISIS now thinking about attacking people outside the region of the caliphate? Well, that's because they don't think that their caliphate has borders. I bet if you walked into a lot of American newsrooms and you asked them to name the new name of Boko Haram, they wouldn't realize that Boko Haram has declared itself the Islamic State of, like, Western Africa or Nigeria and Western Africa. I mean, that we're now beginning to watch other groups of people sign up to be part of ISIS. I mean, Libya would be the other great example at this point. I'm not going to be at all surprised if here in the very near future we hear some sort of public proclamation, just if only for the sake of fear and intimidation, if we hear some sort of proclamation from ISIS of France. And these are not new organizations. They view themselves as one religious theocracy, one nation. Do you get the impression that the press understands that?
No, I get the impression that the press, and then thereby probably the average consumer of that press, is less concerned about ISIS. Well, yes, they struck in France, but their real goals are to basically take over what used to be Iraq. I think we can say that safely, right? Mm-hmm. What used to be Iraq. And then Syria and any place else that they can get their hands on. They view it as a land grab more than anything else, which is a much smaller, more modest goal than what you're talking about here.
Yeah, but see, it's possible to say, of course they want land, of course they want oil, but at the same time, they made it very clear they wanted Nineveh because they considered Nineveh the Nineveh Plain region. They made it very clear that that was a den of heretics, and their goal was to run them out. And in the case of the Yazidi sect, they're saying, you know, we're killing them. I mean, these people don't even get a chance to repent. They don't get a chance to say that they're willing to live in submission to us, as they're allowing some Christians to pay the tax, showing submission and stay where they are, that they're killing a lot of others too, just point blank. But they had a reason for wanting Nineveh, not just because it was there and it was on their way to somewhere else. And you'd have to look, if you're looking at their long-term goals, the two things I always think about the most, one is because I'm an Eastern Orthodox Christian, you know they want the rest of Syria. You know they want Damascus. You know that they want the primary capital of competing religious minorities. They want that conquered. The issue is whether America seems to know that that's their primary goal or not. I'll tell you the other thing, if you want to wake up in the middle of the night sweating, thinking about it, get a map of the Middle East and ask yourself a basic question. What armies are located between ISIS and Mecca?
I'm going to venture a guess. Let's see. One. That of Israel.
Well, I would say Jordan.
Okay.
I mean, at this point, but anytime you talk about ISIS attacking another group of Muslim forces or Muslim state forces, one of the problems we've had is that many people have laid their arms down and either joined ISIS or they have refused to be willing to be massacred by ISIS, which I think you'd have to raise the issue since their theologies are almost the same. They just disagree over who the head of this whole shooting match is. What percentage of the armies of Saudi Arabia do you think would defend Saudi Arabia against ISIS? I think quite a few Jordanians would. And I think America believes, I even think Russia would say that a lot of Jordanians would. But are we confident in the military of Saudi Arabia in light of previous indications of how sympathetic they were to Al-Qaeda, you know, and the funding they've had for radical jihad in some other areas? Are we confident that there wouldn't be division in the ranks of the army of Saudi Arabia if ISIS decided it wanted to take Mecca? And if you give ISIS Mecca, that's an apocalyptic piece on the chessboard when you're dealing with Islam. I was talking about this with another journalist just the other day, and I was thinking, it's like something out of a Left Behind novel or something. Try to imagine America having to try to intervene militarily to stop ISIS from taking Mecca, which means U.S. troops, what, parachuting into Mecca or to land between there and Mecca? If you accept ISIS's larger statements of its goals, I just don't get the impression that the press and maybe even our State Department are looking at the bigger picture of what could happen here.
Terry Mattingly is our guest. We're talking about media coverage of ISIS, its claims, and its purposes. He's Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate, and founder and editor of GetReligion.org. When we come back, he says it's a good idea just to get a translation, an English translation of the statement that ISIS issued after the Paris attacks. If we did, what would we find there? We'll answer that after this.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Welcome back to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking with Terry Mattingly about media coverage of ISIS and its proclaimed caliphate. Terry is Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City. Terry, before the break, we were talking about how the media here has never fully understood what ISIS's purpose is, although you say that if you get a good English translation of the statement that ISIS issued right after the Paris attacks, it's going to be very eye-opening, not only as to their purpose, but how they see themselves and what's really driving this terrorist group. What do you find there?
Well, one of the main things you find is tons and tons and tons of religion, which is an angle of this story that the press, they want it to be kind of about everything other than religion. Because if you admit the religious language, you have to admit the degree to which these people think they're speaking in the name of Islam, which means you have to cover, as you and I have discussed many times, you have to cover the fact that we have divisions and debates and wars within Islam. But a typical example, I have that up on my screen right now because I thought you might ask about it. The Washington Post online did run the full statement in the wake of Paris. So just listen to a little of this language. In a blessed battle whose causes of success were enabled by Allah, a group of believers from the soldiers of the caliphate, may Allah strengthen and support it, set out targeting the capital of prostitution and vice, the lead carrier of the cross in Europe, Paris. That's pretty religious. This group of believers were young, were youth who divorced the worldly life and advanced toward their enemy, hoping to be killed for Allah's sake, doing so in the support of his religion. His prophet, blessing and peace be upon him and his allies, they did so in spite of his enemies. Thus they were truthful with Allah, we consider them so, and Allah graded victory upon their hands and cast terror into the hearts of the crusaders in their very own homeland.
I want to talk about this just for a second, but before you proceed, who is that addressed?
That's enough. I think that's enough to unpack.
Well, who is that addressed to? Is that addressed to us or to the West, or is it addressed to worldwide Islam?
Both. I mean, but one of the things that I've seen some press reports, the press seem mystified that they chose to attack the parts of Paris that they did. Now, you could say they might have done that for pragmatic reasons. I mean, if you try to attack the Louvre, there's quite a bit of security there, and you may not get to blow it up as much as you would if you were looking at symbols of France. But they said they attacked what they considered to be the heart and soul of modern France. So they went after bars, they went after a concert hall, and they went after sports. Why attack a cathedral in Paris, in modern Paris, if you can attack, you know, restaurants, which is closer to the heart of modern-day France? They also went after a section of the city, quite frankly, that includes lots of Muslims, but not the conservative Muslims that live out in the suburbs that have gotten so much attention. The part of Paris they went after is where kind of your modern, moderate, acculturated, quote-unquote liberal Muslims would be living, the people who have surrendered to become French, in the views of ISIS. So they wanted to see some Muslims die, and they wanted Muslims to see them kill Muslims, saying this is what happens to people who compromise in the faith. So, yeah, this statement is to the world. It obviously is addressed primarily to the West because they're claiming credit for this attack on Paris. But, yeah, they're also saying to other Muslims, kind of, we're coming for you too. So much. I mean, this is one of the things about Boko Haram that is really staggering. Boko Haram keeps attacking specifically Muslims that refuse to cooperate with them. And that's just about as explicit as you can get. That yes, they attack Christians, but yes, they go specifically after Muslims who have compromised with the state and have refused to salute a theocracy. That's a part of the message.
Now, the term caliphate, let's return to that if we could. While the Western media attempt to figure out what the word means, my question is, I don't think it really matters what we think it means. It only really matters what ISIS thinks
precisely.
It means.
Precisely, yeah. I mean, and once again, yes, right now, the Islamic State has borders. It has the territory it controls. But if you think in their mind that those borders are the limits of the caliphate, you have completely misunderstood the term. He declared a global caliphate. He said all land Muslims have ever controlled, we reclaim for Islam. Now, what does that mean to Russia? What does that mean to, the Balkans? What does that mean even to parts of Europe like Spain? All land that has ever been Muslim at any point in history, we reclaim for the Prophet, and we're coming after it. But then they claim to spread the faith and, most of all, to have the loyalty of all Muslims wherever they are. So the borders of the caliphate are intellectual and theological, not something that can be defined in terms of points on a map. And this seems to be one of the points that that our press is struggling to get a handle on.
So what do you make of how the press has the kind of the second layer here, how the press has covered the reaction to Paris? And then we also have to add in there was also another Beirut action there, but how the press is reacting to the reaction.
Well, first of all, I think that you mentioning Lebanon is good because, as always, we have a tendency to focus only on the attacks with people with whom we identify the most. In other words, you know, they can blow up all those people over there in that strange part of the world called the Middle East, but good grief, this is Paris. We want to go to Paris. We have friends in Paris. We have, I've never been to, well, other than through the airport, I've never been to Paris, but I know friends who could, tell you everything you wanted to know. I mean, we identify with these cultured parts of Europe, and so thus the American press cares more about that. Lebanon might in some ways be more relevant. I mean, in that if you take Syria, that puts you on the border of Lebanon. And then that's another place, one of the only places in the Middle East, where members of religious minorities have in any way been able to seek shelter, correct? So you eliminate one shelter, Nineveh, you then go after another shelter, the rest of Syria. What's next? Lebanon. Well, what next is also Israel, but that really is the big issue. But except also, we're watching right now lots of increased activity in Turkey. Turkey has been a nation dedicated to a secular form of Islam. They've been kind of tiptoeing out of that in the last decade. But, I mean, what happens if ISIS takes the border all the way to the northern border of Syria and puts them into a direct conflict with the Kurds and then with Turkey? Right now, we seem to see the dominoes that matter the most to us. ISIS leaders see all the dominoes, at the same time. Now, remind me the first part of your question again.
Well, I mean, I think the question is kind of the way that the media have been covering the reaction to, official reaction to, and the general reaction to Paris and Beirut.
Yeah. Well, this gets us close to the issue of refugees, which is another massive subject in the coverage right now. It's really interesting, if you stop and think about it, to watch France. Of course, France immediately launched some attacks as a part of a coalition on ISIS and on jihadi troops, while America, to some degree, has kind of still stood back. And the elephant in the living room right there, of course, is Vladimir Putin. I think it's going to be very interesting if France ends up cooperating more with Russia than with the United States in terms of saying we have to defend the rest of Syria so that we don't have even more refugees leaving. At some point, there needs to be a safe haven in the Middle East. I mean, even if it has to be a separate country or a declared territory like the territories that have been kind of yielded to the Kurds, there is going to need to be somewhere safe in the Middle East for Christians and other religious minorities. And the question is, who in the West is going to say, this is our highest priority in the region, that millions of more people don't die and get shoved into the refugee stream that we have no idea how to handle. At the moment, there's only one person who has stated that publicly as his primary goal in the region, and that's Vladimir Putin. But that means saying we do not want the government of Assad to fall. And Assad is one kind of monster who is different from the ISIS monster, and America has always had trouble trying to deal with these corrupt monsters that lead these regimes in the region, whereas the embattled and oppressed and endangered minorities in the region have felt a little bit freer to be pragmatic, to say the least. I think it's going to be really interesting to watch for any signs whatsoever that America weakens its position on insisting that any solution in the region calls for the immediate fall of Assad. And yes, in part, I think that because that's one of the things that Eastern Orthodox and other Christians in the region have said is they say we know Assad is a monster, but he's a monster who doesn't want to kill us right now. We're willing to live with that monster rather than ISIS.
I'd like you to talk a little bit about another wrinkle in the way that the media has been struggling to understand ISIS, and that is, I read this recently in some coverage, well, expressing concern over how radicalized even anti-ISIS Muslims are in the region. And the term radicalized seems to kind of become the term of art now, that the media seems to be trying to understand for itself sympathy with the ISIS' goal of a caliphate, while not support for what ISIS happens to be doing in Paris or anywhere else.
To me, the big division is still that the press wants to see this as some sort of political logic. Our listeners should watch in the coverage whenever you see references to ISIS having an ideology. The word ideology is kind of a secular term, the beliefs of a state. And of course, in the technical sense of the word, ISIS has an ideology. It's a state. It has an ideology. Except ISIS itself has said, we don't have an ideology. We have a theology. And if you want to understand our actions and our motivations, they are not a matter of ideology and the logic of politics. They are a part of the logic and goals of theology and theocracy, which means we keep expecting them to act logically on the basis of our logic. Why should we expect the people running ISIS to act on logic that we accept as logical? The bigger question is, what do they think is logical within the stated parameters of their own beliefs? And at that point, that would require our State Department and other people to actually look more carefully at their beliefs. I mean, this may sound like a wild leap, but I'm reminded long ago when we were having the standoff outside of Waco with the Branch Davidians, and people were trying to figure out what the people in the compound wanted and what their strategy was and what their plans were. And the FBI and others called in people from Harvard. They called in people from this, that, and the other, and they studied cult. Nobody thought to look at these people's own theological statements and their own statements about the end of the world and their own statements about how they were willing to die for it, etc. Well, what matters the most, what professors at Harvard think are logical actions for these people, are what the written statements of the people inside the compound think is logical. We're now dealing with something remarkably similar on an infinitely grander scale with ISIS.
Finally, with only about 30 seconds here, Terry, what is the handful or several questions that the media still need to answer for everyone about ISIS and answer it accurately?
Well, I think at this point, the biggest issues, the hottest issues the next couple of weeks are having to do with the refugees. I was having a conversation yesterday that involved Molly Ziegler-Hemingway, and she made a very interesting point. Most of these refugees are displaced workers, and a high percentage of them are young males. I think to some degree, something you're not reading in the paper at all is look for signs whether the refugees are families. And also, what percentage of the refugees are Christian or members of other religious minorities? And try to figure out how America can deal with the families who are a part of the oppressed minorities instead of just looking at all the refugees as being the same, like one huge wave. That's, I think, really where our listeners should look in the next week to 2 weeks.
Terry Mattingly is Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate, and founder and editor of GetReligion.org. Terry, thanks for being our guest.
Glad to be here again.
When we come back, we're going to do our series, Christ in the Old Testament, into the strange vision of the prophet Daniel in the 7th chapter of that Old Testament book. Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer will be our guest.
Christ Jesus, the image of the invisible God. For unto us a child is born. The titles of Christ, Good News of Great Joy, the Magnificat. These are some of the Christ-focused themes offered by Ad Crucem this Christmas. Shop adcrucem.com for greeting cards, gifts, housewares, ornaments, music, and much, much more. Available from adcrucem.com, confessing the faith through word and art. Adcrucem.com, adcrucem.com.
LCMS Rural and Small Town Mission exists to support and encourage congregations in rural and small town settings. In partnership with LCMS districts, RSTM is uniquely positioned to make a major impact in revitalization support, community engagement and outreach training, congregational partnership development, and worker support through providing and developing resources geared specifically to rural and small town congregations. Check us out at lcms.org/RSTM or give us a call at our office. We're here to help.
Issues Etc. 24 begins in 17 hours and 45 minutes. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Hollywood's attitude toward Christianity, the Bible's influence on the U.S. Constitution, the decline of biblical preaching, the connection between biblical illiteracy and Western morality. You'll find these essays and more in the new book, The Word They Still Shall Let Remain, The Place of the Holy Scriptures in the Faith and Life of Confessional Lutherans. Check it out at shop.logia.org. The Word They Still Shall Let Remain, shop.logia.org.
The congregation at Lake George Lutheran Chapel is a proud supporter of Issues Etc. We are located on the western shore of Lake George, with the lake in view. Jesus still teaches from the boat of his church, and the people sit, listen, and are fed by Christ himself through his holy ministry and instituted means of grace. Every Sunday, 9 a.m., set your course to 1540 West 800 North, Fremont, Indiana. Like us on Facebook at Lake George Lutheran, and find out more at lakegeorgelutheran.org.